I dare say it was a disaster in the boardroom when it came to light about what they had done, for sure. But yeah, let's not call it what it's not. Let's call it what it is. And it is something that they done with intent.
The Cohen Report. Deconstructed. An honest review of the world's latest and greatest integrated reports with your hosts, Neil and Simon.
We're back with Deconstructed, the Cohen Report Deconstructed, and we're going to look this time, we're going to continue with the series on mining, and we're going to look at Rio Tinto's report. I'm Neil, and I'm joined by Simon.
Good morning.
How are you?
I'm very well. How are you?
I'm good, thank you.
Just got my first jab, so...
Almost on the move then.
I'm on the road to recovery.
Or hopefully the economy's on the road to recovery as well along with it, and we can get moving again. Yeah, because you've been stuck in France for over a year now, right?
Exactly. I mean, there are worse places to be stuck.
I was going
to
say. Anyway, so we're going to take a look at Rio Tinto's report. It's worth mentioning, Rio Tinto don't do an integrated report per se, but this is the first year that they have taken their sustainability report and put it in with the annual report. I think it has a lot of the elements of an integrated report, so we're going to look at it, we're going to look at some of them, and I think we should also, as we've said in previous episodes, mention that we're not, you know, going through the report word for word, and we don't know everything about it, so it's really just our opinion on what we've observed and what we see. First of all, I mean, let's talk, I mean, for those that don't know, Rio Tinto is a mining company. They're headquartered in the UK with a corporate office in Australia. Do you know much about their history, Simon?
I don't know much about their history. I mean, they're obviously a big mining company. They're a massive mining company. They're a big, big player in iron ore from Western Australia. They're also aluminium, copper, diamonds, a few specialty minerals. Big operations in Australia, but also US, Chile, Canada, Mongolia. So it's a big player in the mining industry.
Yeah, 45,000 employees in 35 countries around the world is what I see, and also in copper and diamonds and energy minerals and things like that. So they have quite a wide base. I think when we covered Goldfields, also has a long history based in South Africa, but didn't seem to have as a diverse range of sort of mining assets, shall we say, in terms of countries, in terms of what they're mining for. And so I think I get the impression this is a different scale from...
It is. But of course, you know, as an iron ore producer, that gives them a very big stake in the steel industry, and particularly the Chinese steel industry, because a lot of iron ore goes from Australia to China.
So one of the things that I was going to cover, and this is an interesting one, one of the things that we think about when we think of a company is what are they best known for? And Rio Tinto should be best known for mining, but I think in recent years they've been best known for what has been a bit of a disaster or a scandal or something, and that is the Juukan Gorge. They basically destructed these ancient artifacts.
So it happened. Happened in May last year. So I think for the past year they've been through something of an identity crisis, if I can put it like that. The basic facts are they, as part of mining development in Western Australia, they destroyed rock shelters, Aboriginal rock shelters, at a place called Juukan Gorge, and they're 46,000 years old. They're of extreme cultural importance. Caused a huge scandal in Australia. Senior management at Rio Tinto lost their jobs over it. They lost their bonuses over it. There have been a lot of changes at the company as a result. There was a parliamentary inquiry. So I think the company really since that time has been through something of a crisis because of that.
Yeah, big deal. I have a word from the chairman. I thought it was worth, you know, playing it. We have he has a video, you know, introducing the report, but also talking about Juukan Gorge.
Hello, I'm Simon Thompson, and I'd like to give you a short overview of Rio Tinto's performance in 2020. Our strong operational, financial, and safety performance in 2020 was overshadowed by the destruction of two ancient rock shelters in the Juukan Gorge. I reiterate our unreserved apology to the Buru, Gonti, Gurama and Binigura people and to all those impacted by this terrible event. We are determined to learn the lessons from Juukan, to rebuild trust and to re-establish leadership in community and social performance.
So I thought it was worth playing that, but we're going to hear and read a lot about that throughout this episode. It's a big deal. They ruined what was something that was very precious to a lot of the communities, and this is a recurring theme throughout their report, and it seems to be a recurring theme as it should be throughout the running and the decisions in their business now. And there's a lot about that going forward. So I think he could be a bit, I mean, yeah, it's the same with any of these videos. He could sound a little bit more enthusiastic. I think this is the chairman, but I guess it's scripted and he's been told what to say there. But anyway, I thought.
Yeah, I mean, it's, to be honest, it's an interesting, from a reporting point of view, it's an interesting issue because a lot of companies run into problems like this. I mean, hopefully in most cases, it's not as dramatic as this and it doesn't cause the same amount of damage. But, you know, you can think the example that comes immediately to mind, of course, is BP and Deepwater Horizon. I mean, the question for report preparers is, you know, if something like this does happen, a calamity like this that does overshadow your year, does overshadow your financial results or your safety performance, as the chairman was saying, how do you deal with that in a report? So I think Rio Tinto is an interesting case study in that respect.
Yeah. So what's coming up in this episode? We're going to dig a little bit deeper into the report. We're going to take some sections and sort of align it with the IRC principles. Now, I know I've already said this is not an integrated report in the way that they talk about it, but I think it has a lot of the elements. So we're going to talk about that and go through them. So first of all, as we like to do, is talk about the look and feel. If you take this report now, it's sort of, I'm looking at it online as a PDF, but if you have it in your hands, you know, how does it feel? Do I know what the company does when I look at it? And how do I feel about that? So I think it's designed for print when I look at it. I assume they have a printed version of this report. I'm looking at a PDF, but they do also have a website. We'll talk a little bit about that later. There is no mention, as I say, of it being an integrated report. It does have a lot of the elements, and I think they could easily comply with much of the IIRC framework and its simplicity. When you look at how it's broken down and how the framework, the guiding principles and the elements, there is a lot of it there. Now, I think it would need some work to make it a best practice one. I mean, we now look at Goldfield as a very, very good integrated report. It would have a long way to go, I think, to get there. But it does have some of the elements. Around about 380 pages, I would say 60 or so are the main report, talking about the strategy and how they create value or deplete value, etc. The rest of it is really financials and notes and things. It seems to be in line with the branding of Rio Tinto. One thing that was quite interesting was, and maybe it's sort of in line with the sort of somber mood that they have because of the Juukan Gorge incident, but there's no image on the front of the report, very little imagery used throughout. And if you look back to the previous report, they had a lot more images, they had a lot more site images, they had a lot more of employees, but to me it leaves the report a little bit subdued, and maybe that's deliberate, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, my impression is that it's more of an annual report 2.0. So it's really phase one in shifting from a traditional annual report towards an integrated report. And it's quite clear when you go through the contents, and not just the look and feel, but the contents of the report, that a previous annual report, so a regulatory disclosure, has been pushed together with a previous sustainability report. And you can see the seams.
You can see the seams or see the cracks. I don't know. Yeah, you can see that. I think that's a very, very good thing to know. They have a website, which I found quite easy to navigate. I mean, one thing that is irritating sometimes when you try to find the report is usually I'll Google it. You know, I would say annual report Rio Tinto 2020 or something. But for the purposes of this, I sort of try and do the test. Can I go to the website and navigate my way to it? And, you know, the ABN AMRO is a great example, which used to be very good for that. And they've changed their website. And now every time I have difficulty finding a report manually that way. Rio Tinto, when I go to the website freshriotinto.com and then try and find it, it was very easy to find the report and to find previous year's reports, and often underestimated, but I think that was quite a good touch. And they have a nice website to accompany the report, so I can find the key information on the website without having to download or look at the PDF. And that's actually where I took that clip from the chairman.
And I just followed the link you sent me.
Yes, I made it very easy for you. So yes, I thought the website that accompanies it is quite good. One thing I liked in the report, page 5, is the highlights. They feature very early on. It's nice to see that, not just financial, but non-financial highlights as well. One thing I'd like to see there is more comparatives. Like they talk about, you know, zero fatalities and that's it, which sounds, you know, they seem to be making a big deal about that. And I guess in an industry like mining, that is a big deal. But immediately when I saw zero fatalities, and then I saw another highlight further down, which did have a comparative, it made me think, is that because there was deaths last year or something that they just not want to disclose? But it turns out there wasn't. There was zero deaths last year. So I just wonder what was behind the decision not to include comparatives for all these figures. Maybe there's a good reason for
it. I think that's a good point. That's also why you include comparatives. It's not only to give a sense of past performance, it's also to reassure the reader that, and to give the reader the context that they need to understand what you're actually reporting. So in many cases, you know, lots of companies that we come across will report numbers without any kind of context at all. And sometimes that context is the previous year's number, because these are numbers taken on an annual basis. Sometimes it's actually just putting the number into some kind of context, because people don't, you find it often with carbon emissions, people don't know how much 35 million tons of carbon really is, really amounts to. And I think actually it's important for companies to include that in their reports.
Yeah, just for example, I mean, underlying earnings they have as a highlight, and then they show you what it was last year. So there's definitely more focus on the financials here. But women in senior leadership, 26% this year, up 3.5% year on year, with an aim to improve, is what it says. Yeah, I just would like to see comparatives for all these figures.
And actually, that's where I'd quite like to see the context. So I think the gender diversity was one issue that I specifically noted, because throughout the report, it's presented as a good in itself. Now, you and I might agree that it's a good in itself, but I think as a critical reader, I want to know, why are you focusing on gender diversity? What are you hoping to get from that? Is it because, you know, you feel the social pressure to do it? Is it the context? Is it because you think you'll make better decisions? Which, you know, that's probably the reason you and I would give, that the more diverse your management, the more representative it becomes, and the more and the better your decision making. But none of that, I think, is really explained in the report. So I want to know, why are you focusing on gender diversity? What are you hoping to get out of it? So how are you hoping that will change your company and your decision making, especially in a company which has just been through the trauma of Gorge, which actually is something that the company itself blamed on the decision making process?
Yeah, that's true. It recurs throughout the report. There's much information given, but no context surrounding it. I think that was one of my feelings. And we see that a lot, and it usually, well, I think it's part of the process of maybe putting the two reports together. I think there's very obviously two teams working on this report, and I would guess not necessarily working in
completely in tandem.
Integrated. Yeah, not working in tandem, I think, is a good way. Anyway, nice to see the highlights, but yeah, I'd like to see a little bit more, as you say, context, and I'm seeing comparatives around that. So moving on, another thing that we try to look at with all the reports is the storyline. You know, what is the main storyline that's going through the report? What do I see? Does it give me the story that I think I should be reading, or give me more context on the company itself? One thing that's quite interesting, and I thought, I'm really simplifying it, but if you pick this report up and open it at the front page, you know, flick through the front pages, you would need to know that they are a mining company. And I think that's an obvious prerequisite anyway, so it's not, I don't want to say that's a problem, but it is the way it is. You can't open that report and say, you know, I didn't read anything that says we're Rio Tinto and we're a miner. It begins to tell me all the products that they're responsible for and what they mine to create these products, so then it's very easy to put two and two together, of course. Mm-hmm. But interesting, it doesn't actually say anywhere in the first couple of pages we are a miner and we're this and we're that. So I'd quite like to see that, and it probably will help no one, because you would have to assume that anyone that's picking up an annual report of 380 odd pages knows what the company does. But I thought it was worth mentioning, because it's a very simple thing to fix. And
one thing it does do is that it immediately links its products with their end use. So it talks about iron ore in steel, and it talks about copper, I think, in smartphones is the specific example it gives. What I'm missing a little bit is the follow through from that. So if you take the example of their impact on the environment, so they talk about measuring scope 1 and 2 carbon emissions. They talk about their immediate impact on the environment. They talk also about their decision to come out of coal and fossil fuels. What they're not doing, certainly not very prominently, is they're not thinking about the role they're playing in the value chain. So the extent to which they are contributing, for example, to climate change through the use of their products. So there's a follow-through missing there. So it's all very well saying that you produce copper for smartphones, which is true, and there's a social usefulness in doing that. But you also have to look at your impact on the environment and on society as a result of that. So you have to look a little bit further down the value chain. And I think actually thinking about the value chain is one of the weaknesses in the report.
Yeah, it's one of the things I would come on to when we talk about, you know, what would we do different and recommend. So we can talk a little bit about that later, but I think it misses that part. And it doesn't, you know, maybe that's one of the things stopping them doing a properly integrated report. You know, they did maybe don't have that thinking yet or that process, but it's definitely something.
It's definitely the hardest part to do of an integrated report. Yeah. It's just start thinking beyond the scope of your immediate operations. It's easy enough. I mean, carbon emissions is a great example. It's much easier to measure scope 1 and 2. Than it is to measure scope 3.
Yeah. I think also, which is nice, you mentioned they talk about the product groups and they sort of put the element symbols from the periodic table in that, which I thought was quite nice, of what they're actually mining and things. That was quite a nice touch. Two stories dominate the report. One we've spoken about and will continue to feature throughout is the Yukon Gorge disaster. I'm not sure what they call it, but I'm going to call it disaster. And the other is COVID, which features quite a lot in the report as well. So I think it's good.
I have to say, disaster implies that it was an act of God. This is something they did deliberately.
That's true. Yeah, it wasn't. Yeah. It was something.
They did deliberately, which actually, from a purely technical reporting point of view, makes it much more interesting, because you then have to go through a period of analysis as to why that happened. And I think, you know, the company, what's interesting is right at the very beginning of the report, the company dedicates 2 pages to this incident at Juukan Gorge. And they actually go through, I cannot say Juukan Gorge, they actually go through, you know, the reasons that they think it happened, and they go through what they think they'll do about it. Now, I mean, I didn't find that particularly convincing or particularly complete, but I do think they are addressing it up front, which I suppose they had no real, given the extent of the problem, they had no real choice on that. But I think that is that they entitled those 2 pages a breach in our values. And actually, I think it goes a little bit deeper than that, because it's actually... It would seem to us, now obviously we're at a distance, we're not in Western Australia, this is not something we follow particularly closely, but I would say they're saying there it's a breach in our values, but then later in the report they're saying it was our values that were at fault. It was the fact that the decision-making processes weren't good. Yeah. Or if it wasn't the values that were at fault, it was the implementation of the values.
I think I'll talk a little bit about that and how they're going to address that, but to sort of simplify it, and I'll probably use the wrong wording here because I don't have it written down, but they have mines that they would mark as, you know, protected, or we have to do more work before we can start to blow things up, basically. And we have those that are ready to be mined, shall we say. And this was inadvertently marked incorrectly, I believe, due to bad practices, stakeholder engagement wasn't happening, there was miscommunication. It seems to be a chain of all different events that led to this. And I think you make a very good point. I shouldn't call it a disaster, because that doesn't indeed, you know, sort of imply that something happened out with their control. I dare say it was a disaster in the boardroom when it came to light about what they had done, for sure. But let's not call it what it's not. Let's call it what it is. And it is something that they done intentionally with intent, but not realizing the full implications of what they were doing. So we'll talk a little bit about that. But yeah, these two things feature highly, COVID and the Yukon Gorge incident in the report. And I think they should. These are obviously the two big stories impacting Rio Tinto.
And the interesting thing about Yukon Gorge is actually that, was it a result of something technical going wrong? Was it a decision-making process that didn't function as it was supposed to? Was it a personal thing? Was it something that somebody overlooked? I.e., was it structural? Was it a management issue? Or actually, was it deeper than that? Was it cultural? And of course, you know, we know a lot about the history of mining companies and their exploitation of, and I'm not talking specifically about Rio Tinto, but just the mining industry over the past 100, 150 years, and its exploitation of land and property belonging to other peoples. And, you know, maybe this is actually a longstanding cultural issue that happens to have come to the surface in this case. It's a difficult issue for a company like Rio Tinto to deal with, and to deal with well in a report like this.
I hate to say it, but sometimes it takes an incident like this for companies like Rio Tinto to operate the way they probably should have been. Yeah. It sometimes takes a big incident for the correct controls and the correct procedures and the correct attitude to these sort of things. Yeah. It's kind of much like the financial crisis. Look at how it changed the way that we as society and the way that we as the corporate and financial institutions tackle control and risk, et cetera, et cetera. Yeah. And it took something as big as that.
And part of that is awareness, which is what you're talking about. But part of it is also because all of these companies, whether they're banks or mining companies, are dealing with legacy structures, management structures that have been there for a number of years and that are predicated on certain things that perhaps are no longer relevant. And actually getting to grips with that reform is also
important. Yeah, but you would sort of think, it's very easy from the outside to say this, but you sort of think, right, if I'm a CEO or something, or you inherit, shall we say, you know, this organization, you would try to sort of get to the root of these problems, as you know, you wouldn't just accept it and continue until something happens, right?
But that implies that you're sort of conscious that something will happen sooner or later, which I suspect is not the case. No. I mean, not that either of us have ever run a large mining company. I mean, one of the comments that I have heard related to Juukan Gorge is that actually a lot of the systems were set up with the idea that they would allow mining to go ahead, assuming it was safe. And that actually, that is a starting point, which is a little bit different from, we need to take into account all the stakeholders and we need to have an inclusive approach, and it's possible that mining won't go ahead. And there's a difference between it will go ahead unless, and it will only go ahead if.
Yep.
And I think maybe that is at the root cause of this. But again, we're kind of speculating on something we don't know well.
But it's easy to do that, right? It's easy to sit here and think, how could they have got that so wrong?
Yeah,
I mean, of course. That's what goes through my head. How could you not know? But yeah, as I say,
we... And of course, you're working within some fairly complex systems, you know, legal systems, political systems. You know, you've got the Western Australian government, you've got the federal government. There are lots of different regulations at play. And
So continuing with the storyline, we have the chairman's statement, and he talks a little bit about value creation and depletion. He doesn't use that language. I think that's fairly foreign to Rio Tinto in terms of the language used, but he does talk about the need to consider all stakeholders in a way. And I guess you have to say that given now what we've been talking about. There was a piece, let me just see if I can find it. Yeah, so this is how he opens the statement. Today, shareholders are increasingly focused not only on the financial return that they can earn on their investment, but also on how that return is made. In order to build and maintain trust in Rio Tinto, we must seek to achieve environmental and social goals alongside generating profit for our shareholders. I mean, this is day one, week one stuff for me. If you're doing any sort of non-financial reporting, it's very scripted, as it would be. I mean, you sort of, I get an impression when I read that someone said, we really need to focus on this. I don't get a feeling that it's something genuine that is within the culture yet.
No, I have the same impression. My impression is that... the company is aware that the world has changed and that social and environmental factors should be important for them. But as yet, they have no idea how you incorporate that into managing the company, into day-to-day decision-making. And
I'll tell you what it's telling, and this is a personal bugbear of mine that I talk about a lot, and that is when it's non-committal. So whenever I read something that is, we aim to do this, we seek to do this, blah, blah. You know, this to me is, they don't want to commit to it. So they're going to say the words that someone wants them to say, but they're not going to say anything that might commit them to something. Yep. And it's in this paragraph, in order to build and maintain trust in Rio Tinto, we must seek to achieve environmental and social goals. Why not just be more sort of explicit here? We will do something.
Because I think you've not built it into your decision-making. So it's not entirely clear how you're going to achieve these things. So you can't really go beyond the laudable sentiment that's coming through. And I think one shortcut for this is actually to look at a company's KPIs. So if you look at the front part of the report and the KPIs that the company lists as part of their strategy, the majority of them are financial. So they have operating profit, they have return on capital and so on. They have three that are non-financial, and that is diversity and safety and carbon emissions. Now, I think the safety one, that's obviously very key in the mining industry. The diversity one goes back to what we were saying before, which is, it's fine as a goal, but I think as a reader of the report, you want to know, why is that specifically a goal? I mean, why gender diversity? It's gender diversity that they're talking about as well. Why gender diversity and not 1,000 other issues? And the third one, again, goes back to what we were saying before. So carbon emissions, you seem to be... they're defining your impact on the environment through your scope 1 and 2 carbon emissions, and you're not going beyond that. So I think there's more strategic thinking to be done. That's the impression you get reading the report anyway.
There's more on the chairman's statement, but I'll come on to that separately towards the end of our talk here. One thing that I do want to mention is there's lots coming through on trust and about communities and local economies, etc. But I sort of get the feeling that's a result, again, of the Juukan Gorge.
Because they've lost an awful lot of trust. And it's an old adage in business, which is, you know, it takes years and years to build up trust, and it takes 10 minutes to destroy it. So that's going to be a long term thing.
By contrast to Goldfields, for example, they talk about communities from the off, from the start, and how important it is. And, we spoke with Sven, who's responsible for the report, and everything he talks about communities. You know, it's, I don't know, I sort of, and this is just our, you know, my observation, this is, but I see, you read the Rio Tinto report and you read the Greenfields report, Goldfields report, and you immediately sort of get a sense that one is really meaning what they say about communities and engagement, et cetera, and it's ingrained in the culture. And the other one I can't help but feel is as a result of what happened at Juukan Gorge, which is maybe a good thing. It's not good that the incident happened, of course, but if this gets them on the path that they probably should be, they should, in the end, have a more sustainable business.
Yeah, it's possible this will act as a catalyst. I mean, one thing that I did miss when we're talking about Juukan Gorge is that I want to know where else they might have similar problems. And
well, they talk about numbers. They talk about that they've assessed. So again, I might not use the right language, but you touched on it earlier where a mine may be marked by default as okay until someone says it's not. And I think that's flipped a lot. It's they've recategorized a lot of mines. I think they talk about 1,200 or 1,500 or so, where they've recategorized them, which might be the default as don't touch it until it's worked.
But I think what I want to what I really want to see is actually specific examples, and I think I only really found, if I overlooked them, I apologize, but the only one I could see was with reference to Resolution Copper in Arizona. And I think I'd like to, I mean, they do a lot of mining in Australia, in Western Australia. They do a lot of mining in the States. They have operations elsewhere. I quite like to know, are they aware of the of similar risks in other places? Because right up until this past year, they've presumably been working with the same decision-making system that they had in Western Australia in all of these other places. So, I think that's another thing that could have been brought out in the report a little bit more clearly.
I think it's worth mentioning also this decision-making system has changed. They have a new system in place. They talk about it, I think, page 114, 115 of the report, where they talk about how how they've implemented a new system, which I think is good to see. But yeah, it will take a long, it's like turning a ship, right? It doesn't happen.
In terms of trust, I mean, I think there are things you can do immediately, which is what you're talking about, which is improving the decision-making, but getting that to flow through into public trust is a long-term
thing. I think one thing, sort of touching on what you're saying, is about how balanced is the report. I think it's very balanced, but again, dominated by Juukan Gorge. They had no choice. It has to be, you know, it's dominated by this incident and COVID. And that gives it a lot of balance. I do wonder what we would be reading if it weren't for that incident. It might have just been that everything is fantastic. Anyway, thought it's worth mentioning that on balance. Moving on to materiality, I thought it'd be good to look at materiality. This is a principle of GRI, it's a principle of IARC, and this is a report that is, in part, I guess, aligned to the GRI. So they do have a materiality matrix, but for me, it comes a bit too late in the report. Page 66 of the report is when I see that. And it doesn't seem, at least at first glance, you think this is not ingrained in the strategy process or cycle of the company, of Rio Tinto. There doesn't seem to be a link between materiality as our operating environment, and as a result of that, here is our strategy to deal with that. It seems to be somewhat separate. And I think the biggest giveaway is in the header. It says reporting what matters. So they see this as a reporting tool. I think they see materiality as simply something they have to do to comply with GRI and to put in the report. I didn't get the impression immediately that this then feeds into their decision-making and how does the strategy look, etc. However, you scratch the surface a little bit, you look at what the top issues are, and you get something. The top issue is the response to Juukan Gorge, which by the end of this episode, we should be able to say that no problem, because it features so many times. And right next to it is communities. And then you have ethics and integrity, and you have health, safety, and well-being. Interestingly, the issues that are top, you do sort of then begin to see feature in parts of their strategy and in parts of how they're engaging with stakeholders, etc. I just don't get the feeling that that has been a deliberate link. I think it may have happened per chance, and I'll talk more about that.
I think it's... I mean, my first reaction is it's disconnected. And that's one of the reasons I think it comes so late in the running order of the report. It's not linked to the strategy. It's not used as an organizing framework for the content of the report, nor is it linked to the risk section. Actually, the risk section is a much more interesting read because
I'm going to talk
the company
that.
There has a list of emerging risks, and there should be a distinct crossover between those and the materiality analysis. But actually, there is some crossover, but I think it's more by luck than judgment would be my guess.
Yeah, I saw the same, but I'll tell you, this is not dissimilar to Goldfields. And if you remember one of the recommendations we had, and I have the exact same recommendation for Rio Tinto, is to start talking with these teams together, start to get these processes merged, and you'll get a really solid matrix.
In terms of the report itself, also link it together, explain how the strategy deals with some of these material issues, explain how it's incorporated into your decision-making process and into your management structure and your risk management in particular. The other thing that struck me about the materiality analysis, it's the traditional matrix with what's important to stakeholders on one axis and what's important to the company on the other. I think it's the third most important topic for stakeholders is actually climate. Once you get past Juukan Gorge and communities, and actually it's relatively unimportant for the company itself. And I think, again, that goes to one of my impressions from the report was a lack of strategic thinking about the impact on climate. And I think your stakeholders are telling you through that materiality analysis. Now, there's no doubt they cover the big material issues because I think this is quite an anomaly, this particular materiality analysis, because it's rare that you have a company that goes through such a big event that is always going to be top of your list. I mean, it happens, but it's not typical. And I think that's what's happened in this case. It was quite clear that Juukan Gorge and those issues around communities would come out top of the...
I think this would be a major letdown for them if they were to go on the integrated reporting journey. I think they'd have to do a lot of thinking internally about how they tie these together and how they start to think about this sort of integrated mindset, shall we say, and how these issues are affecting the decisions that are made by the board, etc. So I think they've got a lot to do there. My impression, again, is that they're ticking the GRI box here. And it's because they have to, as part of their commitments to the International Council on Mining and Metals, they have to comply with GRI.
Actually, the connectivity in the report as a whole is not great. So it's not clear. The operating environment section, which comes under strategic context, isn't detailed enough for me. It doesn't mention a few issues that I think it should. It doesn't give much prominence to climate. It doesn't give much prominence to urbanization. It doesn't really tackle the role of the company further in the economic value chain. It's not particularly well connected to either materiality or to strategy. And I think actually connectivity is one thing that could really be improved. And actually, because it seems to be the first year where they're putting two different reports, a financial and non-financial report together, that's possibly a consequence of that, because it's not an easy exercise.
Yeah, I think that was my feeling, is it's their first year bringing these two together. They have elements that they just have to stitch to better together and start talking inter-department, my guess. I get a feeling there's two teams working on this very siloed.
And actually, the result is that the sustainability section, because there is a dedicated sustainability section in the second half, it's not particularly well represented in the first half of the report.
No,
there's lots of good stuff in the sustainability part, stuff that you want to know as a reader. That actually I'd quite like to see as part of the storyline.
It's one of the observations I have. There's lots of sustainability data and KPIs. I would just like to see it tied more to the operation of the business and everything else that I read about in the beginning of the report.
Because actually the impression you have is it's not particularly important because it's been stuck in the back end of the report. And that's probably an unfair impression.
Yeah, I think they're going to have to go on this journey, I think. I mean, there's some improvements, I would say, that could be done to the structure, which would help with this. Some of the wording, like I really wanted to read about the operating environment beyond the company in itself and the incident that's happened. But they have something called strategic context, which I believe to be their operating environment, and they have macro trends in there, geopolitics, technology, society, etc. And then you have the materiality matrix separate later on in the report.
It's pretty short. The strategic context, if I don't have it in front of me, but I think it's a page or two.
Yeah, it's not a lot.
And it focuses on three issues. And actually, I think more could be done on the operating environment.
Yeah, I think you could bring a lot of it together. You could bring this risk exercise, this materiality matrix, this strategic context. You could bring this under the one guise, the one roof, and start to... I think there's just a bit of confusion. And I guess that this happens when you take... I'm going to assume there's two teams working on this. I think when you take your sustainability team and your financial team, you know, together, and you're trying to meet various different, I think they need to sort of sit down with a pen and paper and start, you know, looking at what can we merge here and what will tell a better story. And it's not easy.
And actually explain the strategy in terms of the operating environment or the strategic context. Yeah. That could be done much better, I think.
Again, something more of a bugbear of mine, but when I read a little bit about materiality and things, I see a lot of we aim and we strive sort of language, but I want more commitment there. I also didn't see any specific or explicit definitions on what the material topics were and what they mean to Rio Tinto. Mm. So, I mean, obviously we know about Juukan Gorge, but when they talk about climate change, tell us more about it. You know, what does it mean in the risk, etc. And we'll come on to the risk section in a moment. But I want to see more of that. And what does it mean to Rio Tinto, and how does it influence the ability for the company to create or deplete that value, or impact that issue? And what does that issue have?
And they keep, rather frustratingly, they keep giving hints at some of this. So if you look at climate, I seem to be banging on about climate, but if you look at climate, there's a couple of places in the report where they refer to resilience, climate resilience. Mm. And they referred actually to the value chain effect. So they have a couple of initiatives. I think one in China in the steelmaking business, which is actually about their influence further down the value chain. But these things are not really developed. It's not really clear, for example, what they mean by climate resilience or what that means to Rio Tinto.
I think there's a lot of work they can do there. I think they have the building pieces. They have the blocks. I think they just have to sit down and think this through and don't be afraid to, I think, take some stuff out as well and make space for the bigger issues.
Which actually comes to a rather important point, which is the organization of the material. There's a lot of repetition. So obviously Juukan Gorge comes back several times. I lost count of the number of apologies there are in the report. And actually that's just...
I think that's the sentiment of the company as well, you would hope, right? I get
it's a question of organization as well, though, because you can save an awful lot of work and time by organizing the structure of the report a little bit better. I mean, there's repetition of COVID-19 stuff as well. Even a more minor example, they have an initiative which is called ELYSIS, if I've got the name right, which I think is with Alcoa, and that's repeated two or three times. And it's just a question of organization, I think, and you can cut down on that repetition, makes it easier for the reader.
That's what we're saying.
Actually makes it easier for you as well, because it cuts down the work that you have to do.
And it would flow better. I mean, that's what I'm saying. Sit down with your two teams, a piece of pen and a paper, and start looking at the information and how you can merge it. And don't be afraid to say that is not important enough to go in the report. That can go online. We see this a lot. One thing I want to mention is their definition of materiality. I'm not sure if you read this, and I think this needs a bit of work, and this might help them then merge the materiality exercise with risk, et cetera, et cetera. I think it's quite obviously driven, the materiality process, from the sustainability team. I'm going to read this out. It says, we complete a sustainability materiality assessment every year to ensure we are publicly reporting on topics that matter most to our stakeholders and to our business. You know, that's okay. It's the publicly reporting part that I think, you know, you should you should be doing that, but what are you doing with the results internally and strategy cycles, et cetera, et cetera. In simple terms, a sustainability materiality assessment records the threshold at which an issue or topic becomes important enough to be reported on externally. And that for me is a bit of a problem. That says it all to me, that this materiality exercise for them is simply something to do with reporting. And I think they're missing a trick there.
I think the concept they're missing as well is impact. So, I mean, an issue becomes material if it has a certain impact, and there are ways of defining that impact either on you or on your stakeholders. And that's when it becomes important internally. It's when it becomes something you need to report on externally. It's also where it becomes an issue that you need to integrate into your decision-making processes and your government structures and so on. And I think that's the concept that maybe is missing there.
I think one thing to mention that we mentioned briefly earlier is the risk management part of the report. They have a very extensive risk management section, which again, we've talked about, we think should be merged together with materiality, similar to Goldfields. I thought this was very good, as I'd expect. They talk about the emerging risks. They talk about COVID, trade tensions, societal and investor expectations. It was very detailed. It includes the management response. It includes the opportunities that these risks give them. It includes the threats, the potential impact, etc. I thought this was quite a good section. I'd like to see that merged, as I've said, with the materiality process.
And it's clear and that much higher up in the report.
Yeah.
Not necessarily at the same length, but elements of it, your key emerging trends put up much higher in the report as part of the operating environment or strategic context, and your strategy explained as a function of those, as a response to those.
Yeah, they need to bring a lot of this together and tell the story better and have pieces of the jigsaw more aligned. But the pieces are there; they're maybe just not in the right place.
Yeah, I think it's telling a coherent, integrated story. It's also organizing your marshalling your content properly. So I think what you do as a reader is you start reading, obviously, from the beginning. My experience was I was quite frustrated because I kept coming up places in the text where I was thinking, no, you should be saying this, you should be adding this context, you should be explaining that. And suddenly when I got to page 60, 70, 80, I was thinking, aha, there it is. That's what I wanted back on page 24.
Yeah. Again, similar to Goldfields, they have a nice risk section you'd expect from a mining company, but they need to start talking together. And I think with their sustainability teams, emerging these processes and telling a complete coherent story.
And it'll be interesting to see how that risk management section evolves, should we say, in light of Juukan Gorge, because obviously that was a risk that for one reason or another wasn't acted on.
Yeah. Maybe we'll keep an eye on that one. Stakeholder relationships, and this is a big thing for them, obviously. It's one of the reasons behind the incident at Juukan Gorge. I would have thought at this point I'd be able to say it properly. you get a quick glance in the report on page 18 at who their stakeholders are, who they are. And then later on in the report, very later on, I think page 122, they go into more detail about who their stakeholders are and how the board considers their interests. I thought that was a very good section. Again, I'd like to see it earlier on in the story. I'd like to see it more tied into the story, more tied into the impacts and strategy and everything else that we've spoken about.
Yeah. But I think I'm missing the value creation part of that. So who are our stakeholders, but also what do they expect of us? To what extent do we deliver that? How do we create value for them? There is actually one part, and you really have to dig for it. There's a breakdown of economic value distributed. So you can actually see it's based on the P&L. So what they've done is they've broken down the P&L and said, right, this amount has gone to our suppliers, this amount has gone to employees and so on. Now, I mean, it's a first step, and I think that kind of analysis could, A, be brought up into the main section of the report, if I can put it like that. Mm-hmm. So it should feature much, much earlier in the report. I think more could be done around the analysis there, but it's a decent first step because you are at least admitting the principle that you're creating value for stakeholders other than just your shareholders.
Yeah, and this is interesting because the reason for this, I believe, is actually regulation. So this report, I believe, is published in the UK. The company is under the, UK Companies Act the Companies Act 2006. And actually at the end, I believe, of 2019, there was an amendment to this act which requires companies to disclose in their strategic report, it's called the Section 172(1) in brackets, a statement describing how the directors have had regard to the matters set out, which is stakeholder matters, etc., in performing their duty. And so you find a lot of this stakeholder section is now to comply with that act, that regulation, which is good because
which is very good. But your impression is, again, that it's a compliance.
Possibly. I mean, I didn't go back to previous reports. You would hope that a mining company has good relations with their stakeholders anyway. But again, looking at the incident at Juukan Gorge, maybe they never. I mean, it's so difficult to sort of disentangle this, but it seems to be that they have, you know, a lot of companies in the UK now have very good stakeholder sections because of the regulation. So I guess on one hand, it's...
But again, this is based on the principle that if you can encourage companies to report it, in the end, they will make this part, which is a much more important aspect.
Exactly.
Or make this part of their management.
Yeah. Regardless of the reasons behind it, I think it's a very good section. They go into a lot of detail when they talk about communities and governments. I'm going to read out that's one of their stakeholders, and they say, our impacts can be both positive and negative and require a proactive approach to building trust and partnership. This trust can be easily lost, as the events at Juukan Gorge have shown, and it therefore requires constant focus and careful management to maintain. You know, they talk about it, they say the right things, and they have a large section on this. So I think it's very good to see that, regardless of the reasons for doing it. It's good. It's a real good section, and they do this a lot of detail for all their stakeholders and how they take into account their interests, which I think is fantastic. I'd like to see more of that in other reports that are maybe not subject to the UK reporting guidelines, but it's very significant, I thought. And it's clear who the main stakeholder groups are and how good or not good the relationship is with them, which I think is very good. Moving on, the chairman and the CEO's letter. One thing I want, you know, I think it's great to see the chairman talking about COVID and, of course, talking about Juukan Gorge. We should count how many times we have to say that just in this episode. Or we should count how many times it's in the report.
We should have practiced pronouncing it before coming on air.
Let me, I got it from the chairman. Let me do a search. So if I do a search for, say, Juukan in the report, this would be quite interesting. 114 times it appears in the report, so... Anyway, so it's good to see that he talks about that. He talks about COVID. He talks about safety and culture, etc. However, the sort of bigger problem I have with the chairman and the CEO letter is they're almost identical. The CEO seems to repeat the same as the chairperson, and these are different pages. They're not a combined sort of interview or anything. And in some cases, it's word for word. It doesn't look like anyone's looked at these two and said, right, what do we want this message to be and what do we want that message to be? It's simply like, remember to talk about Juukan Gorge, remember to talk about COVID, remember to talk about zero fatalities. And in some cases, as I say, it's verbatim, word for word. They've just repeated each other. That is sloppy. I'm just going to say it. I think it's quite sloppy. You know, that could be very quickly resolved. And I think just give them their own messaging, give them, put a divide in the way that the company and their governance processes must be divided, and give them different things to talk about. You know, one might talk about the financial performance, one might talk about the response to COVID. You will have to allude to it. You can't have one completely ignoring Juukan Gorge, for example, but let's not make it word for word, or let's take a different aspect of it. You know?
I'm willing to cut them a bit more slack this year, because I think... It depends what we're saying. I mean, that they deal with the same issues, I think, is unavoidable, particularly in this year where you've had a global pandemic and you've had Juukan Gorge. So I think we should cut them some slack in that respect. But it's true. You've got some... It's a communications opportunity. So you've got a bit of real estate here in the report. You can use that to communicate a message. There's no point communicating the same identical message. But I think actually... In terms of the issues they deal with, I think it's inevitable they're going to deal with similar issues.
Yeah, but you can deal with the same issue in a different way, though. Yeah. I mean, I saw almost word for word.
And if you do that, it's wasted. It's a wasted opportunity.
It just looks a bit sloppy to me. But anyway, let's. I think it's great that they covered the big issues anyway. I mean, let's not forget that they did cover the big issues and. You know, they cover it throughout the report. Any other feedback or on the chairman's letter or the CEO letter?
I mean, they did the right thing to a certain degree with Juukan Gorge, and they did apologise for it to some degree. I agree with you. It requires better organisation and better marshalling of the content.
Almost finished, but I think given the climate we're in, we should talk about how reports are dealing with their approach to COVID. And we did the same for Goldfields. We spoke to Sven about it as well. I should mention we reached out to Rio Tinto to get someone to come on and speak to them about the report, but we didn't get any response. So we had to push ahead anyway. I think COVID is covered in all areas of the report. I think that's good. I'd expect to see that. The chairman provides his response. Like he provides the Rio Tinto's response to the pandemic and gives some examples. It features heavily in the risk management framework and the disclosures on page 95, which I think is good. It gives you a detailed response on the, again, as I was mentioning earlier, on the opportunities of, well, you wouldn't think there's any, but there is opportunities of COVID, according to them, the threats and how it impacts. So I felt it was covered quite adequately, as I'd expect. I was quite happy with that.
I think what was positive was the fact it's woven into the report. It's included in most of the relevant sections. So they didn't they weren't tempted by the two-page standalone, let's try and deal with COVID in one place, which I think is not really the way to go. Inevitably, that leads to a little bit of repetition. It's also down, I think, to the organization of the content. So some of that repetition could have been avoided, I think. I have to say that reading reports, I'm struck by the number of companies who've responded well to the pandemic. I've yet to meet a company that or encounter a company that has not responded well. Now, I really hope all of these are true and that this is actually just a sign of how well, as a species, we have responded to the pandemic.
That's a very good point.
Because I've not read a report yet which has said it caused us real problems. So
maybe countries should start doing reports and you might get a different, you might get the response that you're expecting.
Yes.
We'll put the UK against. Well,
I mean, there's a serious point here though, because I mean, even if you look at countries that have done well, so the UK is a good example. So it's done very well with the vaccine rollout. But of course, his record wasn't that great at the beginning of the pandemic. So you've got a very mixed picture, and it's the same with France. It's the same with the States. So, and I do wonder if maybe with certain companies, I mean, maybe they were tremendously well prepared for that, and everything swung into action fabulously. And thanks to the bravery and resilience of all of their employees, they got through the pandemic almost unscathed. But I do wonder if
that's a very good point. Something. I haven't read anyone that said we got it wrong, but then who would, I guess.
Well, hopefully none of them did. Hopefully this is a true picture.
To end, I think it'd be good to talk about recommendations and improvements that you would have. So quick wins and maybe longer term wins for this report. What's your thoughts on that?
Well, I think the easiest recommendation is actually just in the organisation of the content. Try and organize the content a little bit more, bring the sustainability, the financial and non-financial aspects closer together, tell an integrated story. And I think actually there are lots of elements.
Do you think they could easily bring the financial and non-financial elements together? If what we are guessing is correct, that you have a sustainability team who's used to doing a sustainability report, and you probably have an IFRS or a financial team who is doing the financial report, do you think that's a quick win?
I think that's something you can achieve, because it's something that doesn't require a huge structural change within the company. I mean, it requires a structural change in the way you approach reporting, of course, and possibly in the teams that you have taking responsibility for the reporting. But actually, in many places, it is just a question of marshalling your content a little bit more effectively, of thinking about what we report, for example, on sustainability at the moment. How does that fit in with the overall strategy? How does that affect the financial performance or the financial KPIs? So I think you could almost take all the content that you have in this current report, reorganize it, and make it an easier, cleaner, more efficient read. So to that extent, I mean, I don't think that's necessarily something you could do in 15 minutes on the back of an envelope. I think there's a process you have to go through. So it's not.
But you could do it for the next report.
But you could do it, I think, without a huge change in the KPIs you report, or a huge change in the way you take decisions through the company. And so to that extent, it's lower hanging fruit than other aspects.
And what about longer term? What do you think they should be looking at?
I mean, I think that organization also would cover your connectivity. So you're trying to build a little bit more connection between the materiality exercise, as we were talking about, and risk and strategy, between your operating environment and materiality, between operating environment and strategy. So all of those things, I think, also have to happen. The more difficult aspect, if we just stick to the reporting for the moment, I think is actually trying to build in the idea of value creation and a value chain. So thinking about
a proper value chain. Something I never mentioned that to earlier is I couldn't see a proper value chain, but I did see a business model I was quite happy to see, which told me immediately how they make money and how they create value.
Yeah, the business model I thought was good.
Yeah, which is unusual, because usually you see like an integrated report and the business model starts talking about strategy and, you know, all sorts of stuff that it never actually tells you what is the machine that helps them create value. Yeah. In this case, I thought it was very good. So
the business model I think is good. And that's one of your building blocks for a value chain. But I think in terms of, it's not just about putting together a value chain and putting it in the report. It's about thinking, right, you know, where do we create value? Where do we create value? Where do we deplete value? Who do we create value for? What value would we like to create more of? And then as soon as you do that, you start thinking about, taking your analysis of your impact on the climate a little bit further than just your direct impact. So what is my indirect impact? And that really changes your reporting. But you start running into things that are a little bit more difficult to do. So by definition, scope three emissions are more difficult to measure than scopes one and two. Coming up with KPIs that really reflect your value creation or your value depletion, then trying to build them into your management systems and into your decision-making systems and how you remunerate people and so on. That's where it starts getting more difficult. But that ultimately is where you would like to see companies go.
I think for me, what I'd like to see them do, as I've said, I was very similar with Goldfields. I'd like to see them somehow merge the materiality process and the risk analysis process. I think this is two different teams working on it, two different processes, two different set of people they're trying to do this for. I think if they could bring them together, it would create a very robust results that could be used in many places throughout the business and with their stakeholders. So I'd like to see that. That's more longer term, I would imagine. Shorter term, I'd like to see the CEO and the chairman have their own spotlight to talk about different issues. Duke and Gorge, you can't ignore between them, but you can maybe talk more about the impact. You can talk more about what you've done to mitigate it or to stop it happening in the future. You can cover the same topic with a different angle, and of course you can still have an apology in there, which I think they're very keen to do, as you'd expect from the leadership. And yeah, I think just sit down with the teams that are working on the report and look at the synergies. Where do they have overlaps and how can they deal with it? And you know, this might be in their planning. You know, this might have been their first year. It might have came last minute and this is what they've done. And if they've put these two reports together for the first year, it's not a bad attempt at all. So they have all the building blocks. I think they could very easily go down an integrated reporting path and have the potential to do a very great report. It just requires a sort of shift in mindset in some areas. But anyway, on that, we're going to finish up. What would you rate it out of 10, Simon? Would you give this a rating out of 10?
3. Maybe I'm being unduly harsh. I would give Goldfields a 7.
Yeah. And you would still keep your 3?
I'm going to keep my 3 for Rio Tinto.
You are harsh. Goldfields is self-proclaimed as an integrated report, and I think verified by us as an integrated report.
The fundamental difference, I think, is that Goldfields, there are flaws in it, because there are flaws in any report, I think, but it reads as a genuine integrated report. This, at the moment, Rio Tinto, it reads like two separate reports.
Yeah, it's a bit of a patchwork, and I'm sure they're
on a journey. Perhaps a bit unfair to point that out if maybe they're on a... It's part of a process and this is the first year and so on. But on the basis of the evidence in front of me, 3.
Right, great. Okay, so that's us. We'll be back probably in a month with another one. We have a few other in the mining industry to look at. We're going to look at Xstrata, Glencore.
Xstrata, yeah.
Xstrata is the new name, previously Glencore, I believe. AngloGold Ashanti and Implats. What's that short for?
Impala Platinum.
There we are. So we will be coming back at some point with those. But until then, bye-bye.
Bye-bye from me.
If you love the Cohen Report, hit subscribe, rate, and give a review on iTunes or wherever you listen to your podcasts. And don't forget, you can find notes and materials discussed on the show at thecohenreport.com or follow us on Instagram at The Cohen Report. The Cohen Report. How will you report next year?